Hi, everybody. I'm Laurie. I'm a recovering addict.
Hi, Laurie.
It's nice not having that right up in your face. I'm going to lay some foundation with the literature, recovery and relapse, because this is as pure as it gets. And I don't know about anybody else. I always like it pure. So I'm going to bring it straight, take it straight to the head. Okay, many people think that recovery is simply a matter of not using drugs. They consider a relapse a sign of complete failure, and long periods of abstinence as a sign of complete success. We in the recovery program of Narcotics Anonymous have found that this perception is too simplistic. And so that was a revelation to me that if you used, you were perceived, you lost, you failed. And if you're staying clean, you're a winner. You're successful. And that's not necessarily the case. So we need to have some clarification and some disclaimers and things like that to go along with what the literature and what the program of Narcotics Anonymous says is success. It's not necessarily remaining abstinent. It says here, recovery as experienced through the 12 steps is our goal. Not mere physical abstinence. To improve ourselves takes effort. And that is the essence of what a winner is, what success is to me in recovery, not just because you got clean time. And when they say clean time doesn't equal recovery, I know that can be a controversial statement because it takes time to get time. I realize that, and I'm not discounting that by any means. I have great respect for my predecessors, and without them, there wouldn't be a me. However, quality is more important to me. Because a person who's gone through something with less time than me can sponsor me in that particular area. And this is what makes the program so awesome. Relapse, and it's unfortunate that people think, oh, well, why are we going to talk about that? Because it talks about in this chapter that some people are still surprised that people relapse. Relapse is a reality. It can and does happen. Experience shows that those who do not work our program of recovery on a daily basis may relapse. So if you're not working your program on a daily basis, you're a candidate for a possible relapse. Okay? Because addiction is an incurable disease, addicts are subject to relapse. We are never... Now, I had to step back on this one because sometimes I guess I can be too understanding. We can understand people to death. So, we are never forced into relapse. We are given a choice. Relapse is never an accident. Relapse is a sign that we have a reservation in our program. We begin to slight our program and leave loopholes in our daily lives. Unaware of the pitfalls ahead, we stumble blindly in the belief that we can make it on our own. Sooner or later, we fall into the illusions that drugs make life easier. We take the first step. We admit that we are powerless over our addiction, that our lives have become unmanageable. Slowly, things get better. Da-da-da! Okay. Yeah. And we start getting our confidence back. We hit our stride. Here it comes. Our ego tells us that we can do it on our own. Things are getting better, and we think we really don't need this program. Cockiness is a red light indicator. Cockiness. Did you ever see it? Man. Woo. Guess what? The loneliness and paranoia will come back. We find out that we can't do it on our own, and things get worse. We really take the first step, this time internally. That's a magical moment when it transfers from your head to your heart. That's magical. There will be times, however, when we really feel like using. We want to run. We feel lousy. We need to be reminded of where we came from and that it will be worse this time. And it's real important in the essence of when I was studying recovery and relapse chapter. That's kind of the mantra of it. It's kind of the theme of recovery and relapse that We have to remember. We have to remember. We have to continue to reflect. It's the whole spiritual essence of keep coming back and being in fellowship with other people. Talk about it. The book says it so much better than I can. When we forget the effort and the work that it took us to get a period of freedom in our lives, a lack of gratitude sinks in. And self-destruction begins again. In my faith, we have a saying that a pride comes before the fall. And so it is with this that you start lacking gratitude. And self-destruction begins again. And we have to reflect and we have to be grateful for every step that we take along the way. Every single step is valuable. Every step is important. We need to celebrate every step we make towards our recovery. And really, even though I'm going to get to my experience with the relapse piece, I like to celebrate the recovery. Every day is a celebration of steps. When I say I'm Laura, I'm a recovering addict because I'm in process of recovery. That's what my goal is. I line up with the literature that's my goal. Unless action is taken immediately, we run the risk of a relapse that threatens our very existence. So when you see yourself, you get into that mode where you're losing your gratitude, it's necessary to take immediate action. Immediate action. That's critical. You don't slip on down the halfway down the river and then, oh my God, I'm so far from the coastline. Seriously, and that's how it happened. Okay, now let me get into my experience a little bit here. I'm going to set this up. It says relationships can be a terribly painful area. Man, just absorb that for a minute. Okay, got it. We tend to fantasize and project what will happen. Oh, my God. We get angry and resentful if our fantasies are not fulfilled. We forget that we're powerless over other people. And I'll share my experience. My original clean date is February 19th of 1991. In May of 1991, my significant other, who I had gotten out of treatment, they told me, don't go back to him. Leave him. Leave him alone. People, places, and things. And when I championed it. I went to a treatment up in Ligonier. I went to treatment in Ligonier. We were out in the woods just like this. Climb these walls and all this. They said, pretend that's getting over that relationship. I said, all right. Man, and I'm a big girl. I was a lot smaller, but I was still big. And I threw I made it. Yes, I'm going to leave him. Because I knew it was going to be hard, but I didn't know how hard till I seen him. Oh, man, everything just fell away. I'm thinking, okay, wow. I said, I got to go to meetings. I got to do what I got to do. But when he wasn't where he was supposed to be, you know that little alarm goes off. Something's off. Found him. Eyes all zonked out. And what happened is I got angry and resentful because my fantasies weren't fulfilled. Because if you love me, you wouldn't use. You know, why are you doing this to me? I forgot I'm powerless over him. But guess what happened? Thoughts of sponsors. Now, I didn't have a sponsor. That was the one place I was lacking, and I'm going to talk about that. But thoughts of meetings, and I was going to meetings, literature, and all other positive input leave our consciousness. That's how powerful it is. It leaves our consciousness. And I said, I'll show you. I thought for 1 minute to make a phone call, didn't have a quarter. Pay phones were still a quarter at that time. And there was pay phones on every corner still. We didn't have cell phones at that time. And which is a gift. It's a gift because there's no excuse. They used to say, keep a quarter in your shoe. But instead, made a choice to pick up. And really, while my mother tried to, I never really told my mother, but my mother used to say, he's going to make you use. He's going to make you use. What did it say? Relapse is never an accident. So he didn't make me use. I made that conscious decision to choose that path. Okay. It says here we have to keep our recovery first and our priorities in order. This literature is so awesome, so rich. If we have relapsed, it's important to keep in mind that we must get back to meetings as soon as possible. Went back the next day. That was my saving grace. That was my saving grace. Plus, I had a beautiful judge, and he told me, if you come back here, you're going to go to Muncie. Do not go. Do not pass. Go. Do not collect $200. You're going to Muncie. Because we've already went under the guidelines for you. And if you come back here, he said, you don't have the right not to recover. That's what the judge told me. Oh, they called me all types of horrible things. But anyway, our disease is so cunning that it can get us into impossible situations. Before I came here today, I got a phone call from a young lady who's struggling and still using. And it just came in like a flood. It's so fresh. A fresh dose of insanity. And this literature just rings so true when you're in touch with that. But you don't have to pick up to know that it's still crazy. Once we use, we are under the control of the disease. Only a complete and total acceptance of the first step can save us. Attending meetings daily, living a day at a time, and reading literature seems to send our mental attitude back toward the positive. It is important to share our feelings of wanting to use drugs. And here's where it talks about it. I wasn't going to share this, but I'm going to read this. It is amazing how often newcomers think that it is really abnormal for a drug addict to want to use. It's normal. When we feel the old urges come over us, we think there must be something wrong with us. And that other people in Narcotics Anonymous couldn't possibly understand. That's a lie. That's a lie. But it'll tell you that. Your disease, we got a disease that'll tell us that. The progression of recovery is a continuous uphill journey. Without effort, we start the downhill run again. That's why it's necessary for people who have been clean for time. And it talks about that, complacency. Is an enemy to the person with time. It's real critical that we continue to make the uphill journey. And it does not get easier. It's rewarding, but you have to, things just that you used to be able to do, you can't do anymore. It's just not acceptable. We know that the steps help prevent relapse. We must smash the illusion that we can do it alone. Staying clean must always come first. And I was sharing with my husband, because we got so much going on in our lives. I worked today, and I had talked to my daughter who's in treatment, and found out my son's in the hole in jail, and my husband's in the doctoral program at Duquesne, and I have to support him. And I said, I'm not going to this. I'm just not going. That's what I said. I said, I'm going to call him and tell him I just can't make it. He said, are you going to do that? He said, did you run that past your sponsor? And that ended that conversation. But guess what? It's always darkest before the dawn. Once we get through a difficult time clean, we are given a tool of recovery that we can use again and again. And that's been my experience lately. You know, I've been going through some difficult times, some revelation that I don't want to deal with. But I'm getting tools that I can use over and over again. We find that it is best to get back on the program as soon as possible. As long as we maintain an attitude of thankfulness for being clean, we find it easier to remain clean. That's powerful. That's powerful. Stay grateful. Stay grateful. And, you know, I'm ashamed of myself because I'll think I get in such a place of self-pity because things aren't going the way I want to and the planets aren't lining up exactly the way I want them to, that I'll say, I just want to die. That is shameful. That's shameful. I'm blessed. I am blessed. I have a good life. How dare I? How dare I? say, I'm going to kill myself. In a threat, not because I'm depressed, but because I'm not getting my way. That's horrible. I still have that to work on. Oh, man. Wow. Wow. Okay. If we're plagued by an obsession to use, call a fellow recovering addict. Now catch that. Call a fellow recovering addict. Not one that's struggling with the same exact issues at the same time. And get to a meeting. So if you are plagued with the obsession to use, call a fellow recovering addict and get to a meeting. Daily practice of our 12-step program enables us to change from what we were to people guided by a higher power. And that's powerful because the essence of relapse is you're guided by a lower power, for real, the lower nature that we have in us. Okay. We have never seen a person who lives the Narcotics Anonymous program relapse. If that ain't hope, I don't know what is. And then, of course, when you read that, then you go to what is the Narcotics Anonymous program. I ain't got time to get into that. I would if I had more time. But I want to hear deal. Finally, we must relearn, and this is critical, this never changes. We must relearn many things that we have forgotten and develop a new approach to life if we are to survive. That is what Narcotics Anonymous is all about. And it goes on to tell us what Narcotics Anonymous is all about. It is about people who care about desperate, dying addicts and who can, in time, teach them how to live without drugs. So that's powerful. We do recover. We do recover. And I don't know of anything else to give you other than the literature. This is the greatest gift that our predecessors ever gave us, other than their example of living one day at a time without drugs. Get the basic text. It's the basic text. Get the basic text. Read the literature. It's amazing to me how I just today, at 19 plus years clean, just today, this literature was so fresh to me. It was just like a fresh stream. It was just like a spring. You know, you go to a spring, you always get fresh water. And it's amazing, wherever you're at, this literature will meet you. It'll meet you exactly where you're at. And it'll give you what you need. You know, when you're guided by a higher power, when you do the basic things of what is the Narcotics Anonymous program. So that's all I have to share. I love you all. Without you, I can't exist. So I'm so grateful for you. And that's it. Thank you.
I'd like to introduce the second speaker, Gil F. from the New Beginnings Group of NA.
Thanks for sharing, Lauren. I appreciate it, and I'm glad you got clean 19 years ago, or you might be in one of the program I coordinated at the Women's Center down on South Aiken Avenue. Anyway, my name's Gil, alias The Pill, and I'm an addict.
Hey, Gil.
And thanks for having me up here and being able to share. It's a privilege to be able to be here. And my clean date is February 11th, 1979. That's not the first time I came around the rooms, though. First time I came around the rooms was in 1974. Because I was acting out. I was a fool. I was drinking. I was barbiturates and basically, my girlfriend threw me out, and I didn't know what to do. And she said, why don't you look your old friend up, Dennis? Because Dennis, you know, he was worse than me. He had to go to St. John's to detox and then to some place for 28 days. You know, and it was plain for me to see that he needed that because he was worse than me. Okay? Right? Comparisons. Bad thing to do in recovery. I made mistakes making comparisons before I got in here. It's a bad thing to do whenever I got in here, too. But I looked him up, and he started taking me to meetings. There was no Narcotics Anonymous. Okay, so I started going to Alcoholics Anonymous. And the guy that he met me with, there was three of them, Dennis, Barry, and Michael. Michael's dead, quit going to meetings, and ended up blowing his heart off a crack. Okay, we celebrated Dennis's 35th anniversary last October, and his sponsor, Barry, has about 37, as much as you, Ron. Ron comes to keep an eye on me. That's my buddy. I love Ron. Yeah. Anyway, and you know what? So I started going to meetings. But here's the problem. Here's the relapse stuff. It's what I call a motivational relapse. My motivation for being in the meetings, it was secondary motivation. What secondary motivation is that I really wasn't there because I wanted to quit drinking and eating barbiturates and drinking cough medicine and Percocets. Okay? My motivation for being there was to get the girlfriend back. Now, it comes in all different kind of forms. It can be your wife, your husband. It can be the judge, your PO. You know, your employer, you get a last chance agreement, what have you. But it was secondary motivation. So I went into them rooms and I started making comparisons. Bad comparisons. Okay? Now, I did identify something that belongs to the 12 steps back then. And what that was that my wife was unmanageable. And I wanted that unmanageability to go away because I was tired of going to county jails. I could see where I was going. At that time, I was working downtown Pittsburgh. That's when all the boutiques were big, and some guys, and I used to work at Father Son's Boutique and Turtle Shoes, and I managed Brotherhood down at Market Square and First Trumpet, and I worked at all those places. You know, and I was like, I was getting so crazy with them people. I was, you know, they were saying, oh, my goodness, you know. But whenever I was in the meetings, instead of looking for similarities, I was looking at differences. Okay? I wanted that craziness to go away, but I didn't want to quit drinking and getting high. I was working the second half of this first step. Okay, but I wasn't willing to do the first part. You know, I was like trying to just like, yeah, I want this bad stuff to go away, so maybe I go to... But anyway, I heard people talking about how they lost their wives. Well, I wasn't married yet, but yet I was sitting out there because my girlfriend threw me out. My fiance threw me out. Talk about denial, that just went right over my head. You know? And I hadn't done time, but I had been in... You know, if I spent any more than like... You know, a couple weeks in a city, my travel agent made sure I saw the inside of the county jail. You know? And since God's been my travel agent, guess what? I go to the Keys now. I go to all kinds of nice places. All right? No more county jails. You know? And, you know, of losing jobs, and I hadn't lost a job yet. All that stuff. All those yets. Okay? So, as a result, and the other thing back then, I remember I hear the 12 steps read, and the hair would stand up on the back of my neck when I heard God. Why? I was filled with so much guilt and shame for the numerous ways that I had violated my value system. And I didn't know this then. I mean, I was in recovery for a while before I realized what the heck was going on. And I had violated my value system, okay? And that God box that Dot Pally used to talk about that was in here so severely that I hated to hear his name. And I was raised Catholic. I mean, went to a Catholic school, Wilkinsburg. You know, I'm also a wino from Wilkinsburg. You know, every Sunday church, and I thank God for that because, you know, later on when I did get serious, I had that upbringing. And God was not a foreign concept to me. So I compared myself out, and that's when I started shooting dope, and it was like, it was methadone, geographical cures to Florida, and rest down there for drug. It was bad. It was crazy. All right. Overdoses, suicide attempts, you know. So I came back in the fall of 1978. Broken. Tried everything. The VA had me on Thorazine and antidepressants. Because why? Because after I had to leave Florida, I came up here. And I had done this numerous times. I did it when I was in the Marine Corps, and I got arrested when I was in the Marine Corps for smuggling. It was crazy stuff. And I came up from Florida, and I tried to do this thing on my own. Because I knew if I hung around with all the winos and junkies around here, I'd go back to doing, you know, to the cooker. So I lasted probably a month, 6 weeks, and, you know, you can't do this thing on your own. So I was at work one day, and I thought I was coming apart. It felt like my fingertips were going to blow off, but literally, in the top of my head. I mean, and what that is, it's called untreated drug addiction, untreated alcoholism. When I took the drugs away and the booze away, this thing did better. It got worse. Why? Because what's the first thing? Whenever you get, anybody ever had an operation? Before you have an operation, what do? Before they cut you, they anesthetize you, right? So you don't feel it. Got to. For my whole addiction, I was anesthetizing myself, so I didn't have to feel reality. Now you take that away, pain. It was painful. And what I understand that today to be, it's called post-acute withdrawal syndrome. Quit using, and oh my God, the anxiety. So if you're new, you know, the pain that I experienced when I was new, I was so anxious. I was so anxious, and I had a social phobia, and I couldn't stand being around people. I mean, I'd be in meetings, and I'd be sweating so profusely that, I mean, I wouldn't take my coat off because I may leave any second. Okay, I had a 3/4 length leather jacket. It didn't have a lining in it, and I'm going to tell you, I was so nervous because it was in the winter when I got sober, when I got clean. And I would sweat so badly, there were salt stains. This is gross. All from here, all the way down to the pockets down here, I was coming out of my skin. But you know what took that away? Dr. Dopamine. You know, so that intensity, and I know a lot of people relapse because they think this clean stuff isn't that good, man, because you know what? I didn't have this pain when I was using. What I didn't realize is that work a program and all that stuff, okay, because that's a lot of neurological damage that's happened. You work the program, don't pick up, you know, don't drink Mountain Dew, don't drink Jolt, okay? Yeah, you know, don't go into meetings and shove three sugar donuts down your face because that triggers that stuff. You know, I mean, meetings are set up. People don't know. Meetings are set up for that. People say, oh, God, I'm in recovery. I can't sleep when they're drinking coffee at 9 o'clock at night. You know, that's why they call it dope. You know what I mean? You know, I never said, let's go get a bag of smarts. But whenever when I came back in the fall of 1978, you know, I says I knew, you know, I knew I was going to die because my suicide attempt was anyway. I knew I was going to die, or I was not really good at doing illegal stuff. I'd get caught, so I knew I was going to die, or I was going to go to jail. Okay, and I was headed towards jail. And but yet, I had an attitude problem, okay? And I call this an attitudinal relapse. Because I believed that I had a drug problem and an alcohol problem. By this time, I was beat up so bad, I knew I couldn't drink successfully, and I knew I couldn't shoot dope or take pills or any of that stuff successfully. Okay? But I looked at a lot of these early recovery issues and the things that I was told to do if I wanted to stay clean, and some of them didn't appeal to me. Okay? I didn't want to do them. You know? And it was like a cafeteria. I said, oh, this looks appealing. I'll take some of that. What was her name? No. You know. Yeah. Yeah. You know, do an inventory. Well, you know, maybe that's for you, but not for me. I was like a cafeteria. I pick and chose what I was going to do. And what I found out was, you know, with an attitude like that, I'm not staying clean. And I didn't stay clean. I'd get a couple weeks. I'd go to meetings. But then I was like, you know, Shadyside was calling me, and I'd take Saturday night off to go to Fox's, and that was done. I was done. I was back at the Corker. So, here's the bottom line. If it made me uncomfortable, Gil wasn't going to do it. Because I didn't like discomfort, and that's why I used. If it took me out of my comfort zone. So some of the early recovery tasks, you know, that I didn't want to do, I didn't want to get a sponsor. Didn't want to call them, and after I got one, I didn't want to call them. You know, and that's a tough deal. That's a tough. What do you say? I'm not used to calling guys other than asking for dope. What do I call a guy up and ask him? You know what I mean? You know what I tell new people now? Just pick up the phone and say hello to me. That's all. What meeting are we going to? How was your day? That's all. I don't need a life history. You know, I'm not doing your fifth step. But you know what? People, you tell, unless you, I mean, this stuff needs broken down. It needs broken down. Just do that simple. I'm not going to keep you on the phone for an hour. I'm not going to grill you. Just pick up and say hello. That's all I want. You know? New people don't know. I didn't, you know? Get a home group. I didn't want to do that. You know? I pray. I didn't want to do that. I have a whole bunch of stuff that I didn't want to do. I didn't want to change my thinking towards a lot of stuff. You know, the first thing I had to change my thinking was the first step. You know, get reprogrammed. I had bad information. I was programmed from all the stuff people told me on the streets of Wilkinsburg, in the Hill, you know, the North Side, you know, down in Dania, Florida, in the vacant buildings I used to shoot dope down there in, you know, at Marble Mountain in Vietnam, you name it. Okay, I had my computer was programmed wrong, and that's what you're talking about in the second step. That's the insanity. As long as I keep that, unless I'm totally willing to have my whole thought process changed, I'm in trouble. Now, early on, it's just changing my perception of what it means to be an addict is what had to change. What it meant to be an alcoholic had to change. And what this program could offer me had to change. Instead of looking like a bunch of squares, you know, with this hugging stuff. Oh, I mean, I wasn't into that. You know, but my whole belief system had to change. I had to have, I think this goes for everybody. I had to have a deep, deep value and belief in behavioral change sufficient enough to keep me in recovery. And what happened to me was I changed some things, but I wasn't willing to change all those things. You know, I had to change my language. I tell my guys, don't ever look at you, you swear. I mean, I go, I hear stuff at meetings, I'm sorry, I don't care. I offend you here? Tough. I mean, I was at an anniversary a month or so ago, and a lady up there had a bunch of time. Quarter of a century. I tell you what, I wouldn't want my kids in that room. Swearing up, I'm thinking, what is this? What if a new person walks into this meeting? This is about change? No, that's not the way I was taught. That's not the way I teach my people. You better not let me hear you swear. I mean, you slip and you swear, that's another thing. But, you know, there's no place for that meeting. You know, clean up your mind. You know, I'm not in the shooting gallery anymore. I'm not standing on the corner anymore. I tell them, I feel like shit. What's shit feel like? What's shit feel like? You grab it and feel it? What's shit? Don't tell me you feel like shit. Give me a word, man. You're angry, you're hurt, you know what I mean? People need to be trained. You know what? People who've been around, well, I ain't pulling people's coats on that. It's a spiritual program. Warrior at some. I mean, I made my notes too. Yeah. It says our solution is of a spiritual nature. I mean, I remember a guy telling me one time, I fucking pray every night. I wonder if he's listening to them prayers. You know what I mean? I mean, I don't even want to listen to him talk. Yet alone a holy God's going to listen to that stuff. I mean, well, let me tell you. You know, I'm not like, because I used to go to, like, retreats up the monastery all the time. You know, I mean, I didn't come in and become this, like, spiritual guru or anything. You know? And a couple of the guys, before we would go to that spiritual retreat, would stop and watch dirty movies. Yeah, that's why they call it dope. You know? I mean, it took me a while to get this stuff. It took me a while to get this stuff. But there's like, I put it into three categories. Okay? There's people that are recovery prone. Recovery prone is somebody that says, when I say to them, you want to get clean? You want to get sober? What are you willing to do? And they say, I'll do anything you tell me. You know what? I didn't get clean until that's what I said. I remember my counselor at the VA telling me. He says, Gil, you know what? Unless you go to treatment, you can't come back here anymore. And it's bad when you get thrown out of the VA. Because the VA will take anybody back. You know? But I got caught smoking pot up there too one time. But I you know what? I didn't think that was a big deal because I was up there for kicking heroin. You know? So I was kind of like, what do you mean they threw me out? I was just smoking pot. But you know what? You know what I said to my counselor? You know what? He wasn't even a drug and alcohol counselor. Which makes me, I know this is the truth. It's a true statement. This is a lot of wisdom. It says when a student's ready, the teacher will appear. And guess what? At that time, I was ready. And when George told me, Gil, you got to go to rehab, and it can't be one around here because you know too many people. You won't make it. And he says, you need to get out. I'm sending you to Ohio. And this is what I said to him. I said, George, I'll do whatever you tell me to do. But see, I was going to meetings then still. You understand what I mean? So I knew when I said I was going to do it with George, but I knew what the message was. Total abstinence plus working the steps. Not working the steps and picking and choosing what I want, but I mean thoroughly working the steps. And looking at all those defects of character that I signed, like whenever I was, you know, a year so clean, I sounded like they were all glaring. All that street stuff was still there. But at 5 years sober, I was so glad I was able to hear Bob tonight, because him and I go way back. Whenever NA was first getting started, you know, there was like maybe, you know, a group of us that were like 10, 15 of us that were alcoholics and addicts, and we'd start these groups and we'd go to Braddock and the north side, all the different meetings that were starting, because if we didn't go to them, there'd be like only one or two people there. you know, with Dot, Dee, and Esther, you know, I mean, you know, and it's funny too, because whenever I've been in the drug and alcohol treatment field for 28 and a half years. And Dot was one of the people who was sitting on the board when I had to get my certification. It was really neat. So it was, you know. But I was glad to hear Bob tonight, because somebody called me, and I haven't seen Bob for I don't know how many years. Okay, it's been quite a few years. But somebody called me a couple of weeks ago and says, Bob's a new person. Okay? And what he was talking about up there tonight was a pretty neat experience, because at 5 years clean and sober, I hit a wall. Going to meetings, sponsor, everything. Okay, and it wasn't working anymore. Something was missing. So I started reading literature. I thought the answer was in reading all the literature. All the NA, all the AA, blah, blah. I thought that was going to fill this void that I was experiencing. And it wasn't. It wasn't, because actually nowhere in the literature does it say that this is the only stuff you're supposed to read. Okay? And I was seriously seeking God. Seriously seeking God. And I know this is a fact. Is whenever you're seriously seeking Him, and His Word says it, you know, knock on the door, and I'm going to open. Okay? And He put people in my life that I've never, ever thought. Okay? I thought it all had to come from people in recovery. I had this recovery arrogance. My first sponsor was Billy Newmar. Anybody in here knew Billy Newmar? Okay. All right. Billy was my first sponsor. He was a champion in NA. Wonderful guy, man, to be able to experience Billy. Anyway, where was I at? I'm sorry. What's that? Oh, yeah. Our families were really close. And we'd be up at his house on Sunday. And at that time, I was living in Penn Hills. We'd take the parkway, the turnpike. And before we get off the exit of Monroeville, there was a church that would pass, and we'd be going there every Sunday night when they'd be going into church. And I never said, and there was a sign out there that says, "Try God." And I never said it to anybody in the car, my wife and kids. Okay, but I thought, it's a shame that people got to go to church to get spirituality. I was sick. You know what I mean? I mean, nobody ever told me this in the rooms. It's what I come with my thinker, with my faulty computer. I come to the conclusion that them people were the ones that were missing out on something. And, you know, I had it all, you know, I didn't come out and say I had it all together, but that's what I was insinuating when I said, it's too bad them people got to go to church to get God. Because basically, I thought I had it. And I didn't. How about that? Yeah. You know. It was exactly what happened with Bob. My wife says, you know, we ought to start going to church. And I'm, you know, I was raised Catholic. You know, when I was a kid playing ball on Sunday nights behind this church, there was a Baptist church. And we'd see him in there like this. Crazy. This is a cult. I don't know. We were kids. We thought that altar calls. We thought that was funny stuff. You know why? Because of the way I was raised in a Catholic church. Okay? It's actually the way they're doing it, scriptural. Okay? But anyway, she says, we're going to church. Okay. Went to this church. Man, I was never in a church like it was like that church. I used to laugh at it as a kid. Greater Works Outreach. Okay? All right, it's a good thing I was in the middle of the pew, in the middle of the seats. Gil would have been gone. I'm telling you. But you know what? My program training, contempt prior to investigation, and the basic text that says indifference towards spiritual principles, it's a good thing I had 12-step training. So I stayed. And what the guy was preaching, it was like the terminology was different, but it was the same stuff that I was hearing in these rooms. And then later I come, it's through all the readings and everything that I did, I came to find out, you know, how the 12 steps were written. That's why they're so powerful. They were gotten from the Bible. That's why they work for Alcoholics Anonymous, Narcotics Anonymous, you know, Gamblers Anonymous, Sex Addicts Anonymous, on and on. Because they're powerful spiritual principles. But the mistake that I was making at 5 years clean and sober was I was doing basically the same stuff at 5 years sober as that I was at 1 year sober. And the 11th step says, improve your conscious contact with God. And I wasn't improving it. I was doing the same thing. Okay. So I remember, you know, I needed something to fill that hole. And so I remember it was January 5th, 1984. I was 5 years clean, and I was with two guys in a program, a male nurse that I worked with at St. Francis, and a guy that, you know, that was around a little bit, had maybe a year or two more than I did, Bob Aquaviva. He went on to be a minister. God rest his soul. I know where he's at. You know? And I got down on my knees in Bob's living room, except the Lord in my life. You know? And so what I see with a lot of people is they only, just like I did, only take the spiritual thing so far. And if you... And it's kind of like, you know, if you think you're going to do a marathon, you know, what do people that want to run the marathon do? They got to get out there and practice running. I mean, you don't like get up one day and, you know, get out and pay whatever it costs to run the marathon and think you're going to run 10 miles. I mean, you'll be falling on I'd be falling on my face in like a half a mile. You know? Okay, so you have to get out there, you have to train, you have to build up endurance. And you have to work those muscles. And I believe I have a spiritual muscle. What I was doing, that's why I had this hole in me. And it was like, and I see people. And I mean, I've seen it so many times because I've treated so many people that had time. And the recovery thing kind of wore off. And it does. I got to the point, is this all there is? And so kind of people drift. You know, they drift. When you heard Bob was on fire. I mean, you know, he was renewed. And why? Because he finally, okay, got that part in the 11th step. To improve his conscious contact with God. Right? You know, I'm not saying you have to do it my way, but I know what happened. Yeah. You know. Yeah. And I see another category that I see people, it's like a progressive relapse. And I've had a lot of people that like have had clean time and they just slowly quit doing the disciplines that have kept them here for a period of time. And it's so easy. I mean, you know, that's one of the toughest things that I have for having, you know, everybody's, oh boy, you got a lot of sobriety, but you know what? It's real easy for me with 31 years to get complacent. I mean, I've been clean now for twice as long as what I used. You know, I mean, I'm used to, you know, things being nice. I mean, you know what? I mean, God's opened up. I mean, to think that I work for the Department of Corrections now. You should have seen when I threw my rap sheet on the table during my interview. You know, it's just, you know what? I mean, I remember I was in Charleston. I'm never going to get this job. They see my reaction. But I says, you know what I did? I says, go. I was a greater works. You know, I was a greater works. And I was a member there for years, and I remember saying, you know what? What am I worried about? I says, God, it's in your hands. I've given my life to you. I says, you know where my heart's at. And I says, if I'm supposed to have this job, you're going to get it for me. I'm not. Guess what? They hired me. That was 18 years ago. Imagine that. And for 11 years before that, I worked at St. Francis. I was a primary therapist on the inpatient unit. I coordinated a relapse program. You know, And you know what? If anybody would ever talk, I mean, I was so low. When I came in here, I had to look up to see my heels. I mean, I was a piece of... I mean, I never, ever... I mean, that was one of my issues why I used. I had no self-esteem. I didn't do anything right. I didn't do anything right. And for God to take a wreck, a wretched man like me, okay? And I was, I'm telling you. I was worthless, okay, and I'll open up the doors. It can happen to anybody. I mean that. Don't shortchange yourself. But I covered a lot of the stuff, and you heard a lot of the stuff at the meetings and from other people of what you have to do in order for God to open up your doors. And I see people that, I mean, God, you know, I mean, I look at this like, you know, for years, God was knocking on, like the postman, UPS was there and says, I got a great gift for you. More than you could ever imagine. And you know what? I never signed for that package. I kept closing the door. And I was doing that in recovery, too. I kept closing that door because I didn't want to give up some of them defects of character. I mean, my first year, I was sitting in, and I remember my old buddy, and I would look and we'd look around and say, who are we going to violate tonight? We're ladies. But that stuff had to change. Defects of character. Okay, folks, I've done about my half hour here, and I appreciate everybody being here. God bless you, and I hope you get the abundance that God has in store for you. You're welcome.